This is All In. I'm Miriam. So many of us have been working from home, and while it may be considered a luxury not to have to physically go anywhere during a pandemic, experts have been looking into what the potential impact of this abrupt transition will be. And today, we'll talk to three Indiana business experts to learn firsthand how this shift has affected them and the companies they're a part of. With us today, we have Rebecca Ellis, Managing Director of the Performance Lab at First Person, Michelle Mahaffey, Chief Human Resources Officer for Community Health Network, and Nicole Bickett is Vice President of People and Administration at Springbuck. Before we get started, I'd like to hear how each of you have personally had to adjust to working during this pandemic. You know, have you all been at home? Have you been having to go to the office? Rebecca, let's start with you.
Hi. Hello, Miriam. Great to meet you. Thanks for having us on here today. Yes, I was mostly working in the office, so this transition to home has been quite new for me. And with a couple of school-age kids, definitely had some downsides as well as some upsides.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca. Nicole, what's it been like for you?
Yes. Hi, Miriam. Thanks for having me on the show today. It's been a much easier transition than I anticipated. When it started, I had a senior in high school. We're finally empty nesters now. And so like Rebecca said, it was nice to be with her. But I think the biggest benefit for me and some of my coworkers was I live in Carmel. I work downtown. I used to get up at 4 a.m., work out, shower, get everybody fed, get out the door. And now life is a little bit more relaxed. So that's one nice benefit.
Yeah, getting to sleep in a little bit.
Yes.
Michelle, how has this impacted you?
Hi, Miriam. Thanks for having me. So for me personally, I actually started my job at Community Health Network during the pandemic. So I have yet to work in person with my colleagues. We are still working from home. So I started with Community by working from home, and I'm still working from home. I don't have children. So that may mean that it was a little bit easier on me and continues to maybe easier on me. I've gotten used to the commute from my bedroom to the kitchen and wearing socks all day instead of heels. So, but yeah, we are all still working from home, and that's what I'm doing myself as well.
Yeah, well, I relate to you, Michelle. I've started this job and have yet to meet anyone in person, but the virtual technology is great. So Rebecca, let's get into a little bit of some facts here. We're talking about working remotely, but what does it mean when it comes to Indiana? Do we know how many people here in the state are currently working remotely?
Yeah, great question. So based on a study done by the National Bureau of Economic Research back in June of last year, it looks like the Midwest is, not surprisingly, the lowest that are actually working remote. So about 13% of respondents working from home before the pandemic were from the Midwest, which puts us behind the national averages where like 18% from the West were working from home and 15% from the Northeast. So Indiana's definitely got the largest learning curve, so to speak, in working from home. But today, about 37% more of our workforce is working from home, which puts us about 50% in total, which is actually right at the national average that they're predicting.
Mm-hmm. Now, why is it that Indiana has been slow to adopt remote working? Is it because just in general, you know, we always imagine Silicon Valley is always ahead of the curve and they've been doing this forever, but maybe the Midwest is still kind of more social? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. One, the type of work, and then two, the complications of commuting in those geographies compared to here. It is fairly easy to commute in the Midwest compared to the coast, and so I think that's why we've been a little bit laggards in adopting that.
Well, speaking of lack of commute, Michelle, you mentioned it's nice to commute from your bedroom to the office in your house. How has Community Health Network been able to handle this right now with remote working? Is this just now the new normal for you guys?
Well, we're evaluating how normal it's going to be going forward. Obviously, we are in the healthcare business, so most of our employees, more than half of our employees, do interact with patients and provide services for those in our care facilities. So it's only those employees who are not working directly with patients or providing those services who have been working from home. So all of them are working from home. They continue to do so. Excuse me. We're going to keep doing that at least until this summer when we decide to make a call on that.
And working for a health network, I mean, I'm sure that's been pretty difficult, like right when the pandemic started, trying to navigate who's going in and who's staying. How was that transition like?
Well, it was complicated. It was stressful. It was challenging, as you can imagine. You remember hearing all about our healthcare heroes. I mean, our employees were at the very front lines saving lives, while at the same time, a community health network like others had to shut down several care facilities. And in doing so, we had employees who were put on put into positions where they could be available to take shifts in other facilities that they didn't work in normally. Since we're talking about working from home, the biggest transition for our non-clinical employees was figuring out, how am I going to operate? How am I going to be productive when I'm not going into the office? I'm not seeing my colleagues on a day-to-day basis. I'm not meeting face-to-face. I don't have the hallway conversation opportunities.
Yeah, that's definitely the missing aspect, is that sort of social side to things. Nicole, with Springbuck, you know, what's going on with the workforce there? Can you tell us a little bit about how it's impacted your company?
Yeah, so we have about 105 employees, and we were all about 85% were in Indianapolis, 15% across the country. You know, we never expected that we would all go home. When we did go home last March, we thought it would be for 2 weeks. So the fact that we've been successful for this past year, I think, has surprised all of us. Had we had to take on this massive experiment on our own, I'm not sure how well we would have done or thought we would have done. But it's gone very, very well. Michelle said, I mean, the connection piece has been a little bit more difficult, but we usually try to find creative ways to make sure we're still connecting. It takes a little bit more effort on the employees' part to find ways to still connect with their teammates. We have activities that we do, some planned trivia type things. But all the while, you know, I think people being more comfortable at home and being able to work when they want has made them just as productive as before. So it has not been a huge impact on us, with the exception of the connecting piece, and it has allowed us to recruit across the country for the first time. So that's expanded our reach a bit, and we're now about 22% remote, out of state.
Mm-hmm. And so do you feel like that there's sort of a positive side to this, where you've been able to reach more people or connect with folks that maybe never would have worked with you?
Yes, absolutely. We've been able to recruit across the country like we've never been able to do before. And that's been especially great for technical roles. So, And I think it's also been a better experience for the employees that were previously remote, because we had, you know, our technology wasn't probably the best. So once we were all on Zoom, everybody was on equal footing and able to speak and communicate and be heard. So that was another benefit we didn't expect.
Right. Rebecca, now I know you work with companies and you're dealing with this topic a lot. Can you tell us a little bit about the companies that you're working with to help them with this transition?
Yes, we get to work with a lot of really fantastic clients in this area. And many of them are really grappling with this right now, as Michelle and Nicole, you know, are stating. It's taking some time to kind of think through all of the variables and options, but about a third of our clients say that they are going to support permanent work from home, and about 56% really want to provide some type of flexibility, a hybrid schedule of sorts. So from nonprofits to for-profits, from family-owned to quite large enterprise companies, they're all really dealing with the same factors right now and trying to make this decision.
And with the work that you do, do you help them sort of craft specific policies for remote work and how that would look like for their specific niche?
That's right. We help them think through decisions that would relate to their policy, any intentional culture shifts that they might need to make in order to make this a more sustainable. As Nicole mentioned, the connectedness is really so important. And you have to be pretty intentional with your culture to keep the factors that you really want to continue to breed in your healthy organization. We help them think through learning gaps that they might have. As you might imagine, a leader needs to show up a little bit different when they're leading a team that is all at a distance. And so we help them think through those capabilities, both with the leaders and with the individual contributors. And then we actually have a lot of focus on pay strategies. This is a new ballpark for a lot of companies. As Nicole mentioned, being able to recruit nationwide is an amazing win from a talent strategy perspective, but it does have some compensation challenges that need to be considered so that you're creating, you know, fair pay and a pretty consistent approach across the board there. And then last but not least, we have a practice that focuses on change. And so helping them best communicate where they're headed, creating that really aspirational vision for what the future of work will look like in their organization, and then rallying the troops so that everyone feels very committed and excited about it and can see how it's going to be successful for them and for their teams going forward.
And when you mention some of the recruiting strategies and pay and all of that, is that more like if somebody's working for an Indiana company, but they live in New York where the expenses might be higher, sort of bumping their pay based on where they're located?
Yeah, exactly. There's really three strategies you can take. You can take a strategy to kind of pay based on where your employer is based, where your company is based. That's been pretty typical because everyone's been in the same geography. Or you can pay in a differential based on where the employee lands. Pros and cons there for sure. And then you could also just pay based on the role and the differential that that requires versus a geography. And so there's really a lot of different strategies to consider. The most is that you're just consistent and kind of stay with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's always a fascinating concept, just how things are shaping and moving. And, you know, maybe you want to live somewhere you've always dreamed of and work remotely, but the expenses, what's that going to look like? Well, we'll be back with our guests after a quick break. We're talking about the future of remote working in Indiana. If you have questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back after this quick break. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about how companies and workers across Indiana have adapted during the pandemic and why some say remote working might not be going away once it's all over. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. And you can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In VoxPop. Just search for it on your phone's app store, and you can send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it onto the show. Well, we are joined today with three guests: Rebecca Ellis, Managing Director of the Performance Lab at First Person; Michelle Mahaffey, Chief Human Resources Officer for Community Health Network; and Nicole Bickett, VP of People and Administration at Springbuck. Before we went to the break, we were touching up on this idea of recruiting folks from other parts outside of Indiana and what the pay structure and things like that would look like. And Nicole, I'm wondering, you know, with Springbuck, you did mention that you have about 15% of folks from outside of Indiana. Have you had to deal with this pay strategy?
Yes, and this is something we are definitely continually evaluating. Like I said, it's been great to recruit from across the country, but as of now, we do pay Indianapolis rates. We are evaluating that as this grows. I think as we may look back on this year of the pandemic and see that people have switched and gone across the country, you know, everywhere, and I think that could be one of the negatives of this pandemic is that people in Indianapolis could go to New York or California and double their pay. So I think this is something we're all going to have to address as time goes on. And it's definitely something we're continually looking at.
Yeah, I know for some folks, they'll be like, it's my dream to live in Indiana, but have a high paying job in California and live like a king here, you know? So
exactly.
It's definitely interesting. Mm-hmm. Michelle, you know, with Community Health Network, since the pandemic last year, have you noticed that more people are wanting the option to work from home, those that are able to, that don't have to be out on the front lines?
Absolutely. And we're definitely hearing from them. As we have promised that we would give updates to our employees this summer about what we're going to do about remote working. We have had some people speaking up saying, I'd really like it if I could stay at home. But we've also had a lot of people saying, I cannot wait to get back in the office. So, you know, we are taking a position that we're looking at everything from the job perspective. What are the requirements of the job? And of course, we'd like to accommodate everybody's preferences. My expectation is, and I think Rebecca mentioned this earlier, I think most people are going to end up wanting some kind of hybrid. And that's going to be something we have to figure out, because as a organization with much real estate across central Indiana, you know, what does that look like for us? You know, do we keep investing in the real estate we have? Do we downsize that? Do we even just reconsider how we're using that for desk space, if you will? Or do we, you know, really think about, no, let's have whole departments work remote? So we're thinking through all of that right now.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting aspect, is you hear of companies that have just completely closed down their headquarters. And so that's definitely something to consider. Rebecca, is that something you've had to talk through with companies about, whether they should continue to have a headquarter, or if it's best if they're going to go the work from home route to get rid of it completely?
Absolutely. Our own personal company has already given up some real estate where we had an office in downtown Indy and in here on the north side. I think you're seeing a lot of those types of moves and decisions being made. And a few of our clients were actually in the process of building new headquarters. And so it's given them a chance to really just need to step back and pause and say, what type of space do we need to configure maybe differently? And I do think those are important ongoing conversations. I agree. People generally are wanting to have flexibility. And one of the things we know from brain research is that people like choice and having the autonomy to make decisions. And I think that's what is really going to push organization leaders to have, again, fair and consistent policies, but also kind of honor where people have preferences. There's actually personality differences. Introverts and extroverts prefer things differently. We're seeing some data around gender differences. And I'm sure, Marian, you've heard or seen, but a record number of women left the workforce last year. And that's really concerning and something that, you know, we definitely are paying a lot of attention to. How can we best support working parents in particular? Because we cannot afford to get that, you know, that dynamic so off in terms of balance in the workplace. Gartner says 82% of org leaders will support some type of remote work, and that hybrid word, as Michelle reinforced, I think is going to be the winner at the end of the day.
You mentioned sort of the impact on women leaving the workforce. Is that surprising to think that, you know, a lot of people for years have been kind of toying with this idea of remote work in different industries, and then when it actually was almost mandatory in some fashion, that women suffered instead of succeeding?
It is surprising to me. You know, we were trending really close to having a split 50-50 workforce gender-wise, and the pandemic has had a disproportionate effect, I think because of fairly standard family roles that women play have just become really, really difficult to manage. There was, so my first degree is in math. You're going to find I like data a lot to help direct us, right? Not just hearsay, but there was a survey done just early this year, which I find a bit more reliable than things that were done in the midst of the pandemic. But they said that 55% of their respondents, and this was a Harvard Business Review, so very reputable, have difficulty balancing home and work life. And 53 of those specifically citing homeschooling. And so when you think about the school dynamic itself, it is playing a major role in the female ability to have a productive, fulfilling work-life balance right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to get more into sort of the psychological aspect of this. But first, Nicole, you know, what has it been like with Springbook? I mean, what has been the most challenging part of this whole process?
Yeah, so we recently did change our philosophy to permanently work from anywhere. So we call it WFA. So it's not only work from home, but if you want to travel and work somewhere, you can. If you want to completely move states, you can. We will support that. So that's been a big shift for us. And we have noticed what, like Rebecca has said, different personalities prefer different hybrid or combinations of that. Our biggest challenge has been the same. We have not noticed a difference with men and women, though, in terms of managing childcare. It's just very distracting to our team. And so we've tried to handle that by allowing for a lot of flexibility. I know even one of the men that I'm on calls with a lot, his daughter will be having a tea party while he's talking to us. And then he'll occasionally take a pretend sip of tea. But then he has to get all of his work done after she goes to bed at 7 o'clock. And we've just adjusted like that. And we've allowed our team to do it. It's been easy for us to do. So, but that does cause such a struggle for parents to, you know, stay focused and to stay, you know, feel healthy and feel rested. So that's probably our biggest challenge.
And what about you, Michelle? Have you found anything that's specifically challenging with this new format, or is it just kind of like you're taking it as you go?
Well, we're definitely taking it as we go, Miriam. But I think the biggest challenge has been uncertainty. I think that people like certainty. They'd like to know, especially from their employers, you know, what's the plan? Tell me where I'm going to be. Tell me where I'm going to sit so that I can plan for that. And the reality is, especially being a healthcare provider, you know, we are we feel like we're setting an example for how we do this. And by deferring on making decisions about when people are going back to the office or when we're going to have decisions about which jobs may be permanently remote or have a hybrid approach, that uncertainty is frustrating. And I get that. But beyond that, I think we're doing all we can. You know, Nicole mentioned some of their decisions. We've been leaning on we had a telecommute policy in place in the past. And remember, we're all central Indiana, so we've had very few people working remote and even fewer working out of the state. But we've been changing that through this. So we've actually taken our old telecommute policy and we've been adapting it through COVID. Ultimately, we'll have a whole new policy. But we've been leveraging things as we go to try to make sure people have what they need to get their jobs done and they have as much clarity as possible. We just can't provide as much certainty as I know everybody would like.
And have you been able to look at other companies for sort of like examples of how you can do things?
Absolutely. And just speaking from my experience, I have had experiences in other large organizations, many of them global. So I've been around a lot of remote working, dealing with a lot of the compensation issues that Rebecca and Nicole were talking about. So and then we're talking to other employers. We're talking to Rebecca at First Person, we're talking to others to figure out what are some of the best practices that we can leverage, and then how do we prepare to be a different kind of employer? So we are looking at a lot of our functions and allowing either current employees, if you said this earlier, they want to go work in a different state, you know, we're probably going to work with you on that. Actually, we are working with people on that. Or we might recruit someone from a different state and let them stay there. So we're definitely working on all of that and moving in that direction.
And Nicole, sort of a similar question. Have you looked at other companies as sort of an example for where you want to go with things?
Yes, First Person's been a great resource to us, and they've brought together a lot of HR leaders to share ideas, and that's been extremely helpful to us. And the HR world in Indianapolis and beyond has been very generous with their communication and sharing what they're doing with their policies. So I think one of the things that we've seen that has needed to increase the most with us being remote has been communication. So in terms of pushing more of that like regular communication. So once the pandemic started, we started weekly town halls. And that connected our team and allowed them to ask questions. We kept them updated with what we were doing. We built an entire COVID return policy that we never used. Because as we started looking at our policy to return, we just realized it was really not we didn't need to. Our lease was ending. We could save some money on our lease and use that money for when it's safe to get together again. Maybe we can bring the entire group together quarterly. So these are all things we've shared and talked with other HR leaders about, and continue to just adjust as we go.
That's interesting you're mentioning the saving the money, because I've often wondered, you know, if companies can save money, what could they spend it on elsewhere that would make sense, whether it's upgrading technology or opening new positions. So that's definitely something to think about. Rebecca, I'm curious to know, have you met any companies or dealt with any companies that are a little bit resistant to this and trying to find a way not to adapt to remote working?
It's a really good question. I have to say, I can't think of any client that we have at the moment that is in that position. I would say a year ago this week, there were a number of CEOs that I was working closely with that were still kind of checking on who was there, who was not there, looking at their, chat, green, yellow, red lights to see. I think we were just not always in a place of trusting that people would get the job done. And I have seen complete 180s on that from some of my leaders that I get to partner with. And I'm super encouraged by that, especially because of some of the data. And as Michelle mentioned, conversations where people want to know, because it is factoring into their decision whether or not to stay. And there are some, you know, surveys and stats out there that are pretty concerning about if a company is not willing to be flexible and allow some remote work, that folks will choose to move on to those that are. And so I think Michelle and Nicole are super smart in engaging with their peers and understanding what might be a norm for our region and beyond, because I do fear for the companies that are outliers. I don't think they are going to win the quote unquote war on talent in the future if they are not more flexible.
Yeah, absolutely. And for our listeners, just to explain a little bit, there are some platforms that companies use and for colleagues to interact with each other and communicate, and it will indicate when you're online and when you're not. And I can say from my experience, I feel like I get paranoid. I'm like, if I step away from my computer and the light turns yellow or red, I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to get back on, make it green. I need them to know I'm working, even though it's fine, right? So that's kind of an interesting new twist to everything. So Rebecca, I mean, when you're working with these companies, do you notice a difference between the size of the company, big or small, in their willingness to adapt this new form of work?
To be honest, it has been fairly even in that way. I have not seen differences based on size. I think the biggest differences come in to play based on the type of work. And so clearly it is a lot more difficult for our manufacturing clients and those that need on-site presence to basically provide their client service versus those that have a more flexible professional services type of work. I've seen, you know, a lot of innovation even in what you would consider more traditional skilled trades type of work. But I do think that is where a lot of the difference comes, not so much in size or how the company is organized, profit, nonprofit, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Nicole, when it comes to this remote work, it sounds like you guys are pretty much fully on board with adapting to this new normal. Were there any detractors, or could you share with us what the cons to this would be? What the arguments for those who just don't think it's a good idea would say?
I think one of the things that we considered was opening up new states. I mean, there's tax implications, there's different legal implications that make it more complex for us. So that was something that, and I even know some of our peers have said, you can't go work in some of these states because we haven't opened that one up. Now, we have not said that yet. We're in so many that we just decided that our employees living in their dream state was more important. I think also just the distraction of, like you said, the distraction of kids. It's interesting talking about the software tracking your work. I think if I had that would be extremely, cause me so much more stress. And I think it would cause our team so much more stress. You know, we didn't know what they were doing necessarily in the office, let alone at home. So you've just got to trust. And I think you've got to look at the output overall. We should be able to tell what people are doing. We know that we are productive. So, those were some of the things that we considered.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to sort of the tax issue and working out of state but living in state, is Indiana fairly easy with that kind of process? I know there are some states that are just like, no, you know, California and New York is completely out.
Yeah, it's funny. We were in California and New York right away. So they might have been more difficult from the tax perspective, but also from a legal perspective. I mean, laws are changing. Colorado has new laws where you need to, you know, let people know that you're posting a new position. Everyone that is in Colorado needs to know what that role is and how much it pays. That's something that's mm-hmm. changing that companies aren't prepared for.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about working from home and why some companies in Indiana say they plan to make lasting changes to the way their employees work. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soeb, and you're listening to All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. Back now to our discussion on the future of remote working in Indiana. We have three guests with us this afternoon. Rebecca Ellis, Managing Director of the Performance Lab at First Person, Michelle Mahaffey, Chief Human Resources Officer for Community Health Network, and Nicole Bickett, VP of People and Administration at Springbuck. So we have some folks on Twitter who reached out to us to share their experience with remote working. And I think that's a great way to sort of get into this psychological aspect and the social aspect of working from home. One listener says that the employer requires a hardline internet connection, so they're relegated to working in one room of the home for 8 hours a day. They've gained weight and at times feel depressed. The upside is that this person and his wife have become closer, but he says he does love not being in an office. Another person on Twitter says that they find it harder to disconnect from work and that the work-life balance has shifted towards work due to the current market conditions with ocean freight. And he goes on to say, it's also due to my employer shifting from a customer service business model to a profit-driven business model. So to our guests today, I'd like to talk a little bit more about this sort of the feeling that employees are facing. You know, is it really impacting them and sort of the social psychological aspect of that. I'll start with you, Michelle. You know, have you heard from employees who are kind of struggling with this new format?
Oh, we absolutely have. And I would echo that sentiment of the work-life balance for a lot of people really is shifting to work to the point that it's almost like you just don't shut down. As an employer, Community Health Network has always put an emphasis on ensuring that our employees have resources available to take care of themselves. And we've really doubled down on that during COVID with a big emphasis on employee well-being, making sure we have the right resources in place. We've added resources and doing a lot more outreach, a lot more communications. I will say in my 10 months at Community, I've been very impressed with the frequency, the cadence of communications from leaders to the employees. And during COVID, that has just been very important that we kept that up. And in fact, we increased the frequency of our communications, which has really helped. But in those communications, we are constantly reminding people to take care of themselves. And we're sharing ideas with them about the ways they can take care of themselves, both individually and then making sure they're looking out for their peers as well. And I think mm-hmm. Nicole mentioned earlier some creative ideas, right? So we have some groups that will get together virtually and share ideas about how can we take care of ourselves and each other, having a virtual happy hour every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And doing trivia virtually, really fun. So it's absolutely a big deal. This is a big thing, and something we're putting a lot of emphasis on, making sure we help people out.
Mm-hmm. And Michelle, I would imagine also in the health space, we often hear that folks that work in health often put themselves last because they're busy trying to take care of everyone else.
Absolutely. And I have found that is true for our clinical employees as well as our office-based employees. It is part of our culture. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So all the more important for us to get out there and encourage people to take care of themselves. Take time off when you can and really detach. So time off no longer equates just being at home, right? It means shutting the laptop and walking away for a bit and really taking time away from work.
Yeah. Well, I can attest that it's so hard, especially when everything's online. It's like, how do I draw the line between doing work and reading articles?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely a balance that you have to strike. Nicole, do you have sort of a system in place for checking in on employees to see how they're doing with all of this?
Yes, and like Michelle said, we have also increased our support of our employees during this time. You know, we've noticed that some are doing better working from home, but some are doing worse. It could be just personality. Some are getting healthier because they can eat from their home, you know, kitchens, and they can work out during the day, and some are feeling isolated. So we increased our EAP policy. We do have more connection points, like we talked about, but purposeful connection points. I think another thing that's been helpful to us while we can't walk up to each other's desks is Slack. I don't know how many of you use Slack, but we have a lot of Slack
yes.
groups. It's essential in this day and age. Like we have Dogs of Springbuck, Cooking at Springbuck, and it's such a great way to get to know our coworkers and chat with them about something other than work. So that's been helpful. We've also mm-hmm. done a stipend, like a $500 work from anywhere stipend, so they can increase their technology at their desk or make that more ergonomic. We're just trying everything we can to make the experience more comfortable for our team.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Rebecca, when it comes to sort of the psychological effect, I know we briefly touched upon that in the last segment. I mean, what are you seeing and hearing from folks about this?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of new mental health challenges with our clients and in the community as a whole. And sadly, it's a global problem, right? Because the pandemic does not kind of pick and choose where it's playing. And so, you know, just in the Harvard Business Review study I mentioned earlier this year, 1,500 respondents in 46 countries said only 20% feel good about their well-being and only 2% feel excellent. And I think that's what we all want for our employees is we want them to feel excellent physically, mentally. And so we're seeing a lot of uptick in mental health first aid, an offering that we have. We're seeing, to Nicole's mention, really be more intentional about those employee assistance plans, the EAPs, and, you know, text therapy and other benefits that are really important to help people kind of get to the root cause and not just, you know, the happy hours are fun. We do them too. We had a happy hour with a goat farm, as a matter of fact. And those are fun and uplifting, but they don't necessarily sustain the mental health that we need ongoing. And so it's a mixture of those things that are more light and fun and more kind of deep in their meaning and in their purpose. But the disconnecting is a real problem. And it has actually been a problem since before the pandemic, and it's just accelerated. And so before the pandemic, there were studies done that already said 80% of people were anxious about their work email use at home, and 55% of their spouses were anxious about it. And so some of that work-family conflict has already been in our world, in our environments, and now the boundaryless way that we work has just exacerbated it. And so we have to be much more intentional about how we disconnect and how we separate ourselves. And some of that's on us as individuals. Some of it is on the company to make some more norms, policies around that. And then a lot of it is on the leaders, because it's leader behavior that often has impacts on individuals that they don't even realize. For example, sending an email at 9 o'clock at night because my kids have gone down for bed and it's the best time for me to clear it off my plate. Well, when it lands on that other person at the end of the email chain, they feel an obligation to answer it, even though you don't want them to, right? You don't want them to feel obligated, but these kind of intrinsic ways of us feeling that we should be connected put this create kind of vicious cycle in place where that behavior then just starts to take over more than it should. And so we've got to have more mm-hmm. intentional conversations about communication norms and just giving people permission to disconnect.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I have seen in some email signatures now where people will say things like, my work hours may not be your work hours. Just to let you know, you don't have to respond right away. I think it's just kind of become habit, right? Like as soon as someone says something, you feel like you got to respond instantaneously. So in terms of sort of this work-life balance and getting employees to realize that they maybe don't have to respond right away, Nicole, have you had conversations like that with any of the employees to tell them, like, it's okay after five, you can just completely shut down?
Yes, we absolutely have. And when Rebecca was talking, it reminded me, my boss often, she's in meetings all day, every weekday. So on the weekend, she will catch up, but she will tell us, do not look at my email, do not think about it until Monday morning. So she kind of just sets that permission. We can still do it if we want to clear it off, but if we don't want to, there's not an expectation to. And I think that is huge for leaders to keep in mind. Another thing that we've done is that our team has just shared together is that they have just found through this experimentation that if they move to a guest bedroom or even their own bedroom out of their kitchen table in their living room, that has helped because they can shut that door and turn it off. So I've noticed that on my team, that made a huge difference. And I think the problem is we're not connecting at work anymore, but we're also not connecting personally anymore. So it's been kind of hard. You know, we used to, Michelle talked about her commute, you know, to her family room at the end of the day. And that was a downtime moment that we all had that we no longer have. So we have to build in our own commutes of sorts to just make that shift.
Yeah. Yeah. I've often wondered, like, should I take a walk around the block for 30 minutes just to like take up that time? Otherwise I'm going to log on. So yeah, that's definitely something to consider. Michelle, you mentioned like some of these activities that you've done and these virtual events. Do you feel that like using these video calls and stuff has been helpful or do you feel that some people are a little bit hesitant to come on camera?
Well, people who work with me at Community would probably smirk at that question that you asked me because I'm a big proponent of turn your cameras on. Turn your cameras on. And it's not about, you know, we need to look like we dressed for the office, right? It's about the engagement and doing everything we can to connect, make eye contact, even though the eye contact is a little bit skewed because we know you're not looking right at the camera all the time, right? But it really does make a difference. And in my opinion, it really enhances the relationships. And Miriam, you know, when you start a job, and to this day, a lot of my team members, I still only know them in a box on a screen, right? So it makes a world of difference if we can do everything we can to connect visually with one another. And the other events that we've done, I will add, have been really helpful because not only that face-to-face, virtual face-to-face interaction, but adding in laughter. If you can add in laughter, add opportunities for people to share a joke or laugh about something that isn't on the agenda, you know, it makes a difference.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I've been thinking with these virtual interviews and meetups that you meet people through these video calls. When I meet them in person, is everyone going to have to hold up some kind of like a cutout box so I can recognize them? Because that's all I know these days, you know.
Well,
what's the impact
in
the future?
The cameras make a difference. I've had two people come up to me in Kroger, and I have no makeup on. I've got a bun on my head. I'm wearing a mask. And they've come up to me and said, are you Michelle Mahaffey? I work for you. And they've recognized me. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess there is a benefit to having the videos on.
Absolutely.
That's hilarious. Rebecca, can you tell us, you know, what are some tips that companies can use to keep folks engaged in this virtual environment that we're in now?
Absolutely. So Michelle just brought up, I think, what is the most important, which is to the degree possible, try and have as authentic as live conversations as you can with a video where that's feasible, because so much of what we communicate is not the words we use. And so to see those expressions, to be able to read each other, I think is also really important for leaders just to get a sense of where people are emotionally and mentally, and also just from an engagement perspective, you know, do they seem to be in or out, or where are they trending today? We've also seen some benefits even in our own company of like the stoplight, like at the beginning of a meeting saying, hey, I'm having a yellow day, or, you know, I'm trending kind of red here. Mm-hmm. And that just helps us know, you know, in the water cooler, you know, type of chat in the office, you might have picked up on some of that. It looks like maybe they're, you know, having a bad day, and the empathy would be more automatic. And then this way, I'm not saying that you need to have inauthentic empathy, but you have to work harder to know kind of where to apply it. And so I think the focus on soft skills is really important. I believe the future of work, specifically around leaders, is going to weigh a lot more heavily on soft skills than on technical kind of functional knowledge that has been one of the leader kind of identifiers in the past. And so I think it's important to focus there. I do think it's important to share some basic tips and create some of those communication norms like Nicole mentioned. And actually one of my favorites is the delay send feature in email. Because if I think that my folks are going to read the email, even when I excuse them from it, so to speak, if I delay sending it with a little option, a couple clicks in email, then they don't have to make that choice on their end, because I'm making the choice on my end as the sender versus the receiver. And it's just a couple clicks, usually in Outlook or Gmail, whatever you're using, to say, don't land this email till 8 o'clock tomorrow morning versus at 11 o'clock at night when I might be sending it. I also think increasing the availability of things like yoga and mindfulness, like the Calm app is one of our favorites around our organization. Those things, again, kind of get to that root cause of the stress and starting to eliminate it from the source versus letting it get to a bigger issue. But the biggest thing for me really is about norms and everyone having a shared agreement of what that looks like and how to best take care of one another.
Mm-hmm. And have you seen a positive response with these things being implemented?
I absolutely have. One thing that we don't yet know is what is most impactful. So we're in the middle of our own research study right now to get to the source of that. What's the lowest effort, highest impact? I think if we could get to that kind of holy grail, then we would know for sure that these are the interventions that are worth putting a little bit of effort in. The reality is most of our clients and leaders that we work with have no shortage of work on their plates right now. And so it's not really a fun time to do a lot of trial and error to find what works. And so that's the benefit we try to bring. Our value proposition is kind of the fastest path to a successful outcome. And so that's what we're searching for.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate everyone's insight today. And it's been great to have you all and learn more about this remote work and what the possibilities are in the future. I want to thank all our guests for taking the time today to be with us. Rebecca Ellis, Managing Director of the Performance Lab at First Person, Michelle Mahaffey, Chief Human Resources Officer for Community Health Network, and Nicole Bickett, VP of People and Administration at Springbok. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brooks. Scott Cameron is our Managing Editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow for a conversation on the crucial role supply chains have had during the pandemic, from toilet paper to vaccines. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. And as always, you can leave us a message and get included on the show. I'm Miriam Soeb. Thanks for listening. This is All In.